Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help power the collaboration needed for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, Atlassian software is built to help keep you connected and moving together as one. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to the Prop G Pod's Office Hours. This is the part of the show where we answer your questions about business, big tech, entrepreneurship, and whatever else is on your mind. If you'd like to submit a question, please visit officehours.propgmedia.com. Again, that's officehours.propgmedia.com. First question.
Hey, Prof G, it's Tim Mitchell here from Johannesburg, South Africa, and I have a question about Web3 in the experience economy. It's really exciting to see our world shift towards some kind of new normal as we return to sports games, concerts, conferences, and the office, with some sources stating that up to 88% of companies are beginning to plan a return to in-person events post-pandemic. However, one of 2022's most hyped technology trends, Web3, largely seems to be stuck behind a pane of glass, enabling virtual experiences. So I'm interested to know what opportunities you believe Web3 could offer for in-person experiences. Do you think we might see a future of NFT sports tickets to avoid ticket scalpers at the Champions League final, or DAO crowdsourced concert lineups to give fans the musicians they want to see the most, or even DeFi to fund projects that best serve local community needs? Thanks, and I'm interested to hear your perspective. P.S. Love the podcast, and get in touch when you're ready to go on a non-virtual safari in South Africa.
Tim from Johannesburg, thanks so much for the thoughtful question. So you're late. I went on safari 2 years ago in South Africa, spent several days on safari. I thought Cape Town was arguably the most beautiful city I'd ever seen. South Africa is, I mean, I think we'd all live there if it wasn't so goddamn far. Anyways, congratulations on living in such an incredible place. So earlier this year, back to your question, in partnership with Ticketmaster, the NFL gave Super Bowl attendees customized NFT tickets with their unique section, row, and seat number. These tickets were commemorative rather than practical, but apparently the NFL is exploring the possibility of using NFTs for future ticketing purposes. I would say that the greatest opportunity for Web3 disruption are probably the experiences that are generally an inconvenience, such as going through the airport or visiting the doctor. I'm a big fan of Clear. I just don't understand why the TSA should exist. It seems to me that the TSA should be a combination of smart contracts, the blockchain, and biometrics, so to speak. If our passports and boarding passes were stored on the blockchain and biometrics became the standard for security, our airport experience would be much less of a pain in the ass. And if all our medical records were on the blockchain, switching physicians or providing proof of vaccinations could be painless. In San Marino last year, COVID vaccine passports were tokenized on the blockchain and accessible via QR codes. I think it's the dumb, boring shit that moves the needle. So it strikes me that the real opportunity for the blockchain is just to create a more secure ledger around certain information around who you are, your identity, your passport. I'm on the board of Ledger, the cold storage hardware wallet. And one of the things that we're really excited about is that at some point, your identity and your health records are going to need safe, cold storage. Why on earth? I've been to the doctor a lot recently between colonoscopy and checkups and physicals to get insurance and all this shit, and also to get my asshole bleached, which I think is important at my age. Anyways, don't know where that came on. That just popped into my mind. That's who you're dealing with here at the Prof G Show. Anyway. I don't understand why every time I walk into a fucking doctor's office, I get to fill out the same shitty paperwork on the same shitty clipboard that I've filled out literally a million times. No, I have not had a heart attack. No, I do not have epilepsy. I mean, for God's sakes, shouldn't this be stored somewhere where they can just pull it up and they scan my retina and say, okay, and it's served to them in an absorbable, digestible way that automatically disappears or cannot be transferred out of that office without my permission? It just blockchain that shit up. Oh my gosh. Fantastic. South Africa. Tim, thanks for the question. Next question.
Hey, Scott. My name's Ben, and I'm a startup founder from Fort Collins, Colorado. Thanks for your great content and honest and self-aware approach. Your book, The Algebra of Happiness, was recommended to me by a family member, and I loved it so much that I've recommended it and even bought it as a gift. My question relates to your podcast's revenue model. Have you considered becoming a subscription service or at least providing that option? Thanks a lot.
Ben from Fort Collins, Colorado. Thanks. I'm in Colorado. I'm in Aspen. I love Colorado. I have this impression of Colorado being America. It strikes me as fairly purple, which I like. I like your elected leaders here, specifically your governor and your senior senator, Michael Bennett. And I think Aspen is the most wonderful place, or one of the most wonderful places in the world. I used to just come here to ski. Now I come here in the summer and don't come here in the winter anymore. Come here in the summers. Anyways, let me go on and on about my privilege. So to your question, it's sort of opportune. I had a meeting with the CEO of Vox, Jim Benkoff, who's this very thoughtful, nice, and he's probably the most generous boss I've ever had. And even though he's my boss, I actually saw him a few days ago, and he said something really interesting to me. He was studying media moguls when he was at Wharton Business School because he clearly decided he wanted to be a media mogul, and he has become a media mogul, and said that they all had one thing in common, and that is they were all really good with talent, and they all recognized the importance of developing those relationships. Anyways, we talked about a subscription model. They want me to launch. I'm going to launch something called Prof G Markets, where we just talk to investors and academics around the markets, about the markets, unpack a specific stock, share some personal learnings about my adventures and misadventures in the market, and bring on experts, and basically try and have a more thoughtful, slow-moving version of CNBC instead of the eyelashes, hair dye, sleeveless dresses, and, you know, trade like Chuck, opioid-induced constipation commercials. Was that a little much? Anyways, I'm really excited about this. And he suggested, let's do subscription instead of advertising. And supposedly you can convert about 5 to 10% of your audience to subscription. I love the idea of not having ads, although I enjoy actually host readover ads, but I like the idea of uninterrupted storytelling. Subscription revenue is a better model than advertising revenue. It's more enduring. People are less likely to give up their subscriptions than advertisers are to stop advertising in economic downturns. And Vox becomes worth more with every incremental dollar they get from subscription as opposed to advertising. So obviously, Jim's a fan of launching Prof G Markets as a subscription. Now, a couple of my concerns. One, I think the subscription model has been overinvested. The memo is out that it creates more shareholder value. So everyone has poured so much money into subscription-based offerings, specifically Netflix and Amazon Prime, that the bar is really high to get someone to take their credit card out and enter into what I would describe as a monogamous relationship. It's been so overinvested that I would argue in the last 6 months, there's been a bit of a, regression to the mean, where advertisers are actually desperate to find media properties that reach attractive audiences. So if you're one of those properties, and Prof G is, we get great ad rates. We get CPMs of $50 or $60, which are great ad rates because the people who listen to our program don't spend a lot of time watching ad-supported media. So we can deliver an attractive audience to advertisers who are increasingly desperate, i.e. will pay more. So the ad model right now works pretty well for content providers because the subscription platforms have become so over-invested. Now, will that last long-term? Probably not. But my concern around moving to subscription is what happens in 2.5 years when my contract with Vox ends and I want to take Prof G potentially somewhere else, or at least have the negotiating leverage when I'm negotiating my next deal with Vox. I want to be able to take those subscribers with me. And there's some question over who would own those subscribers. Whereas if I have an ad-supported model, I just port over to another platform. So I'm thinking selfishly around my own business model. The folks at Vox have done the analysis and they say it would be about a wash in year one revenue between subscription and advertising. So in sum, whenever you find someone like me saying, well, maybe I'd rather do advertising, you got to look to, well, where are their incentives lined up? And as you would have guessed, my incentives might be that it's better for me if I stick with an ad model. Also, you've had a tough time or a tougher time moving to subscription with podcasts. I think Wondery was the one that tried to do it, and I don't know if that's worked out well. So I don't know if my stuff plays well to subscription. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I think you'd have to test it. A thoughtful question and something I am thinking a lot about right now. Sorry for the long-winded answer, Ben from Fort Collins, Colorado. We have one quick break before our final question. Stay with us.
Support for Prop G comes from Mint Mobile. If you're tired of your pricey phone bill, you could make room for it by cutting out frivolous expenses, your lattes, your gym membership, your favorite streaming service. But that sounds terrible. Another probably better option is switching to a more affordable provider, like Mint Mobile. With Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That includes high-speed 5G data plus unlimited talk and text. And Mint Mobile has great rates whether you're buying for one or for a family. And their family plan starts at just 2 lines. You also don't need to get a new device. When you buy a new Mint Mobile plan, you can use your own phone and keep your phone number and contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/propg. That's mintmobile.com/propg. Cut your wireless bill up to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/propg. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Support for Prop G comes from Atlassian. Atlassian software, including Jira, Confluence, and Trello, help power the collaboration for teams to accomplish what would otherwise be impossible alone. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. That's why millions of teams around the world, including 75% of the Fortune 500, trust Atlassian software for everything from space exploration and green energy to delivering pizzas and podcasts. Whether you're a team of 2, 200, or 2 million, or whether your team is around the corner or on another continent altogether, Atlassian software is built to help keep you all on the same page from start to finish. That way, every one of your teams, from engineering and IT to marketing, HR, and legal, can stay connected and moving together as one towards shared company-wide goals. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian.
Welcome back. Question number 3.
Hi, Prof G. Good morning. My name is Paul. I am recording this from Dubai, where I am on a work trip currently. I was born in Poland, officially work in Paris, France, and I live in the UK. So unpack that. Now, my question is, I've spent 20 years working in retail and wealth banking at two of the largest banks that you can find globally. I am making a transition to work at a smaller, more niche player, and very reflective over how someone can make that transition effectively from working on what I would say is an oil tanker of sorts and moving to being on more of a speedboat. Smaller, slicker, faster type environment. Very, very keen to hear your thoughts and insights on how you have seen people make that change effectively and impactfully to land well. Super fan of all your work. Love hearing your voice on a run, on a plane, in a taxi. And thank you for everything you do.
Paul, that's a really nice message. Thank you. And congratulations on leading what sounds like a really interesting life. What you've done, Poland to Paris and the UK, that doesn't happen by accident. Clearly, you are risk aggressive and have decided you want to experience a bunch of different things. So good for you. I'm not sure if I have a ton of insight in terms of going big to small and small to big. A few off-the-cuff observations. The wonderful thing about a big company is its scale and the platform. When you call from wealth management at Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan, you usually get your call returned. That's not necessarily true at a small firm. That's the bad news. These platforms have incredible stature. And I think a lot of times people leave these big platforms, especially in media. It's very easy for media personalities to think, you know, I'm the reason this thing is successful. And what they find out when they leave the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, or they no longer have carriage on MSNBC or whatever it is, that no, it was really the platform. So these platforms are really powerful. Now, here's the downside of the platforms and the upside for you. A smaller company is more nimble. They don't have as much bullshit, as much politics, as much compliance, as much mandatory offsite training days on, you know, name your most recent issue we all need training on. It's easier to communicate up and down the food chain. You know, some decisions, when my firm, L2, was acquired by Gartner, decisions would come down. They turned off our website, I think, one weekend and ported it over to the Gartner website. And I couldn't even find out who made the decision. I spent the better part of a Saturday trying to just find out who made the decision. At a small company, you can grab the key principles around any project, client, or decision. And the highs are higher and the lows are lower in a small company because there's no one really to blame but yourself. It's much harder to hide. At a big company, the business may be going poorly. You just take your vacation and you worry about it, but you don't worry about it too much. At a small company, everybody needs to be feeling the pain and feeling the upside, because if you're not doing your job or your division isn't doing well, it's going to hurt the whole small company. And a small company can go out of business. JP Morgan probably isn't going out of business for a long time. So act like an owner, spend a lot of time investing in those key relationships, and hopefully you're able to port some of your clients from a bigger company and take advantage of how nimble you can be. That wasn't a great answer. The bottom line is I don't have a lot of insight here, Paul, from Poland, Paris, and the UK. But thank you for the kind words. That's all for this episode. Again, if you'd like to submit a question, please submit a voice recording by visiting officehours.propgmedia.com. Our producers are Caroline Chagrin and Drew Burrows. Claire Miller is our associate producer. If you like what you heard, please follow, download, and subscribe. Thank you for listening to the Prop G Pod from the Vox Media Podcast Network. We will catch you on Thursday.